I'm Marco Werman. You're with The World. Glad you could be here on this Thursday. Okay, I don't mean to be alarmist, but a week ago, few of us were contemplating the possibility of a war with North Korea. Not seriously. Now, after all the hostile rhetoric from both Pyongyang and Washington, it's not far-fetched to wonder what would happen if a conflict really does break out.
If our response on the North Korean nuclear program is nuclear weapons, the fallout pattern puts that fallout over Japan.
I can't believe we're even talking about this. More on the possible military scenarios later on the show. First, like I said, I'm not an alarmist, so let's start with a reality check. There are intelligence reports that North Korea has miniaturized a nuclear warhead so it can fit inside one of its missiles. I asked John Schindler how credible that information is. He's a former NSA analyst and counterintelligence officer, now a national security columnist for The Observer.
The U.S. intelligence community is not completely behind this assessment, but the DIA report is broadly agreed with by a lot of intelligence agencies, including a report out of Japan. So I don't think this can be dismissed out of hand. But you have to remember that the Defense Intelligence Agency is one of the lower rungs of our intelligence community. This does not carry the weight of a CIA assessment, for instance, which has greater prestige, generally better analysis. So I think some caution is in order. It shouldn't be dismissed. But it is DIA, which has a pretty bad reputation in our intelligence community, frankly, for shoddy analysis. They were responsible for a lot of the debacle back in 2002 and 2003 over Iraq WMD. So caution is probably wise.
You've described North Korea as a black hole for U.S. intelligence. What are the major difficulties getting intel out of Pyongyang?
Well, if I could break this down a little bit, the U.S. government, like all modern governments, gets intelligence from many sources. We have human spies, we have electronic intercepts, we have spy satellites taking pictures, the full gamut. And North Korea is really tricky for all of those, particularly because we don't have an embassy there. We don't have commercial relations with North Korea. So there aren't American business people, there aren't American diplomats, which means there aren't American spies. Electronic intercepts are difficult. The North Koreans are very aware of our capabilities and do what they can to fool us, to spoof us. And even taking pictures from satellites, which is safe, is no panacea. That's our biggest source of intelligence. But the North Koreans have capabilities in what spies call denial and deception, meaning that they know we're taking pictures and they go to some lengths to fool us.
Let's go back to the credibility of this intel, because you brought up the DIA and the war in Iraq and those reports that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, which turned out to be false. How do we know there's not a similar situation going on here with this assessment?
Well, I think North Korea is much further along in the sense that we know from seismic watching that North Koreans since 2006 have detonated several nuclear weapons underground. So there's no real debate about that. The debate is simply about their capability of weaponizing it. Mm. I do want to make clear that, you know, Saddam Hussein wanted the world, especially Iran, by the way, to believe he had nuclear weapons because that was deterrent. It would regime survival. His denial and deception program convinced us more than Iran and really worked far too well. I don't think the North Koreans are in that boat exactly. This is a regime that's been doing this for a very long time. We know they have chemical weapons of some sophistication. If they are within even less than a year of miniaturizing a warhead to put on an ICBM or medium-range ballistic missile, I think that is a very serious problem.
John, you work for several intelligence agencies in the past. How do you evaluate an intelligence report about a potentially dangerous development like this? Like, were you skeptical of the WMD assessment in Iraq in 2002?
I was. I think a lot of people were very skeptical. The problem was the political pressure was on from the White House on down to find a certain answer. And I think we all have to be concerned this could be happening again, notwithstanding that obviously North Korea is much further down the nuclear road than Saddam's Iraq ever was. Look, you assess things with a seasoned eye. You know, an individual human intelligence report is not very persuasive. A single electronic intercept or two or three are not particularly persuasive. A handful of satellite images of a known or suspected nuclear missile, that's not in itself conclusive, but you put them all together over months and years, and this is where veteran analysis really matters, you do get a much clearer picture. And you have to understand North Korea, despite the incredible intelligence obstacles we face there, has obviously been one of the highest priorities for U.S. and Western intelligence for a very long time. So we do everything we can to find out what we call ground truth about what's going on there. Pyongyang obviously makes it very difficult for us.
That's John Schindler, a former NSA analyst and current national security columnist for The Observer. Now onto how the U.S. might respond to North Korea's nuclear capabilities and its threats. North Korea has threatened to test fire missiles at the waters around Guam. So what options would the U.S. have in such a scenario? We put that question to Joshua Pollack. He's editor of the Non-Proliferation Review and previously consulted for the U.S. government on issues related to weapons of mass destruction.
Normally, there really are no opportunities to intercept test launches at all. This may be an unusual circumstance, though. The reason you normally can't intercept a test is most countries test inside their own borders, and you can't position defensive assets there. In North Korea's case, they test out to sea, but we can't defend the oceans of the world. We have to focus our assets. In this instance, however, they have told us where they're going to shoot. They have told us that they are going to come within 30 or 40 kilometers of the shores of Guam, where a THAAD unit exists.
And what is the THAAD unit, just briefly?
That is a theater high-altitude area defense system. In other words, it is a missile defense unit that covers about 200 kilometers in the direction that it's pointed. So anything coming from a certain direction that's anticipated that comes into the defended area is potentially interceptable. Furthermore, since the North Koreans have told us roughly when to expect this test, we can also position even more capable defensive assets in that area in the form of Aegis-capable destroyers, which have even more powerful interceptor missiles on them. I'm not saying that it's necessarily a good idea to do this if they simply are going to kill some fish. Maybe you just let them. But it strikes me as something that the administration will probably consider.
So as we just heard, North Korea is making advances on the offensive front. Has the U.S. kept up on the defensive front?
Well, we're trying. Both THAAD and Aegis have recently been tested for the first time against targets that simulate intermediate-range ballistic missiles like the ones that North Korea is threatening to fire into the vicinity of Guam. They have been engineered and updated and perform pretty well in tests. We can contrast that with the ground-based mid-course defense based mostly in Alaska, whose purpose is to intercept ICBMs aimed at North America. That has about roughly a 50-50 rate of success over the years. It has not been tested extensively and has had a very disappointing track record. Ultimately, our defense against nuclear attack is not defense at all, but deterrence. It is persuading an adversary with the prospect of retaliation that it is not a good idea to attack in the first place.
I got to say, it's really disturbing to see, you know, headlines about people thinking about World War III these days. Just help us understand what this moment means. I mean, how anxious are you?
I'm not happy, but I'm not too worried either. What this looks like to me is the beginning of a new mutual deterrence relationship. That was a very shaky process between the United States and the Soviet Union. It was relatively smooth with the United States and China because of the Chinese low-key approach to nuclear weapons. This is shaping up to be somewhere in between. I don't think we are headed for the Cuban Missile Crisis Part 2.
What would you advise the U.S. government to do right now?
I would advise them to talk to the North Koreans about setting up a hotline between the Department of Defense and their general staff of their military. It could take a variety of forms. I think this is simply what a responsible nuclear-armed state does to avoid its own destruction by accident. That is how the North Koreans portray themselves. So they should be willing to give it consideration. Whether either of the governments in question is interested right now, I don't know, but they ought to be.
Joshua Pollack, editor of the Non-Proliferation Review. Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.